Welcome to the Meal Mentor Podcast. We're into season two, and I am so excited about my first guest this season. She's the other love of my life, other than Scott, and it's funny because when I met her and her mom a few years ago at a McDougal weekend, I had no idea at that minute that she would become my family and one of my closest friends and someone I'm very inspired by. And we just have this kind of mutual love fest going on all the time. And I apologize to people who see our professions of love on Twitter. But she's laughing.
Never apologize.
So let me just jump right in and introduce my very good friend and my soulmate in so many ways, Chrysanthi.
Hi, Lindsay.
Thank you so much for finally coming on the podcast. But it's not your fault because you were on tour, which is what I want to talk about because you just spent was it a year and a half?
No, it was a little less than a year, but
okay.
Prep and everything, it was, you know, almost a year.
On tour.
Yes.
And so you're like living in a bus, basically, or airports.
Yes.
And you stayed not only plant-based, but whole foods plant-based, no oil, and avoided eating out.
Yes.
So you got to tell us, because everyone thinks it's so hard to be plant-based when they travel, like, up the street to see their grandma. And you, like, lived out of a suitcase, lived on a bus, and did it.
Yes, on three continents.
On three continents. How many countries total do you even know?
I keep meaning to do a check, but then I'm like, oh, I have to go to the tour list and, like, parse out all the countries. It's too much work, but it was a lot.
It was a lot. All right. So tell us, like, what were the foods that you were like eating on the bus?
On the bus? Mm-hmm. Well, sweet potatoes were my staple. So as long as I had some sort of, I call them bulk foods, you know, like the foods that fill you up, like sweet potatoes or cans of beans. Mm-hmm. So, as long as I had some of that, then veggies, I could just fill in, so, yeah, really, I lived on sweet potatoes, cans of beans, rice noodles that you could just heat up, oatmeal, and, like, bags of spinach.
Now, I know you guys had to, like, sleep on the bus a lot because you were doing a lot of traveling, but you got to stay in hotels sometimes. Were you able to get, like, hotel rooms with microwaves or fridges or anything?
It always depended on the hotel. Refrigerators were definitely more common than microwaves.
Really? I would have thought it was the other way around.
No. Well, they often had a mini bar in the fridge.
Oh.
But you could ask, I would ask, can I just take the like liquor out and put my veggies in? And they'd say, sure. And sometimes you'd move the sensor and so they'd charge you, but you just tell them, you know, it's my own food. Yeah, and they're like, oh, okay, no problem. I'd never in any of the hotels, I never had a room tab. I was never charged for any of that stuff. It was never a problem.
Really? Oh, that's interesting to know. Because I always get nervous that they're going to charge me like $200 or something.
If you're nervous, it's just best to call down in advance. Be like, hey, just so you know, I'm going to put my own food in. The sensor might move.
Yeah. On a podcast last year, I think it was Katie's podcast, she had mentioned that if you ask for a fridge, they have to provide it. And they can't ask why because it's some medical act where people who have like insulin, they need to have refrigeration. And so they have to provide it for them for their insulin, but they can't ask because it's a medical thing. And I haven't tested this out yet, but I found that really fascinating. And maybe that's why it's just not a problem when you've been like, hey, I'm taking out all the booze.
I did not know that that was a thing.
Yeah, I keep meaning to look into it to verify, but she said she's done it a few times and it worked. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting and kind of makes sense. So yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Regarding microwave though, as I said, that was harder. It depended on the hotel chain or whatnot. Sometimes they wanted to charge you for a microwave and I would always turn it down because I love having a microwave, but at the end of the day, again, I don't need it. I find workarounds for pretty much everything. Sometimes they'd say, oh yeah, sure. It'll be waiting in your room when you get there. I would call or email when I was on the way over or if I knew in advance that I'd be at that hotel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, calling ahead definitely helps.
Absolutely. Or worst comes to worst, like they don't have a microwave, but room service will take your food, microwave it for you, and just bring it back. And that's what happened in Japan and the Philippines. They never gave me a microwave, but they would take my food and microwave my potato and bring it back for me.
Oh, that's really interesting. I didn't know that, but that's cool. The only time I ever ran into microwave issues was in Europe. A lot of times they were just like, we have no microwave. Nowhere. But they always offered to like steam stuff for me. But it kind of stunk because I would have like those rice packets where they're like little bowls of rice and you just microwave them for 90 minutes. I'm like, yeah, it's not really steamable, I don't think.
Right. But in Europe, then they also have the hot water kettles.
Oh, that's true.
Opens up a whole new set of possibilities.
Yeah. Whole new world opens up to you with that when you have hot water at your dispense. So what did you do? Because I know a lot of times you're at these concerts and it's so much longer than what we experience as the person going to listen to the music, because you guys are there way earlier and there's like sound checks. You're just there all day. And I know, too, when you were on Glee, for example, you were often on set for the TV show for hours and hours and hours. Do you bring food in a bag for yourself? Like, how do you do? I mean, you must eat.
Yeah, I certainly do. I always find a way to eat. We know that. But, okay, well, on Glee, it was more craft services, and then there would be catered meals. And if it were a breakfast, there'd always be oatmeal at some point. Oatmeal or some sort of plant-based cereal. Like a lot of plain cereals are actually, you know, plant-based, no oil. Like, so I would have those. If worse comes to worse, like, honestly, I just tell everyone, just carry a potato with you or a can of beans. I would always have that at my disposal if I needed it.
Mm-hmm.
There's always going to be pretty much a green salad. It might be a really sad salad where, with 15 calories in it, that's not going to keep you going. So then that's where you just whip out your secret weapon, you know, potato. A potato, or you sit, you know, do you have a can opener? I brought my own can of beans.
Yes. Or, which I'm sure they do. And I guess you can always bring your own if you're extra paranoid. Or now I've been finding, especially at the supermarkets, not necessarily the health food stores, but the supermarkets have those pop top bean cans that are like a soda top.
Yep. And those were in Europe a lot. So that was really nice.
Go ahead.
No, in Europe, I got so many of those pop top beans and cool kinds too, like lentils and like all these different varieties of beans.
When I was in Mexico with my sister, we found a bunch of canned vegetables that also had the pop top. And that was really helpful for us because sometimes we would go hiking. And so we'd be like, all right, let's just take a can of beans and a can of corn and a can of green beans. We were like, I would laugh because we would like jingle almost because we'd have these cans like bop, 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 bop around in our backpack. But
yeah,
we were happy.
Yep. catering on tour was there. I could always count on there being a salad bar. And most of the time that also meant that there's chickpeas or kidney beans in the salad bar too. So if there was nothing else, plant-based, vegan, which sometimes there was, there'd be a rice cooker or something. But if there wasn't, I could usually have the garbanzo, you know, stock up on the garbanzo beans in the salad bar for calories, for energy.
And one thing I remember when you were on tour, because we talked a bunch, was that everyone on tour was given sort of like a little amount of money that they were allowed to use in restaurants, and you almost never used yours ever, where, you know, a lot of your bandmates were blowing through their allowance, so to speak.
Correct.
And then struggling, but you were just like comfortable.
Right. On every tour, I've been on three tours now, but also on a lot of gigs, if there's travel involved, they'll give you something called per diem, which is untaxed cash. It's like a little extra allowance per day. It's anything you need to spend during the day, like food, basically.
Mm-hmm.
There was no need for me to really go out to restaurants and spend that money. So I would just get to save it. Or if I needed food, go to the grocery store and spend like an eighth there for a few days than what I would have at one restaurant.
And how would you find the grocery stores? Because you're traveling constantly. You guys were in a new city like every other day, and a lot of these places you'd never been to before in your whole life. So how did you know where to go to a grocery store?
It's so easy with the internet now. It just was never, ever a problem. I could Yelp something. A lot of different countries have Yelp as well. If not, just Google search. If not, just ask the hotel or a local person where's the nearest grocery.
Mm-hmm. And a concierge could probably tell you. Was there ever a place where you couldn't get to a grocery store because it was too far away?
There was a time where I did walk like a couple miles to one, but that's only because it was a personal decision to go to one that had a lot of stuff. I've gone to a gas station mart before,
mm-hmm.
and that was fine. I would think I was able to find oats and like fruit and some other stuff. It was just never an issue, honestly. And sometimes I would maybe buy a few sweet potatoes and save an extra one in my luggage, maybe just to have in case. So I did have
the emergency sweet potato in the luggage.
Yeah, or I would just keep like a bag of rice noodles there just in case. I actually carried rice noodles for my last whole leg of tour and I never needed it. I was always able to find food.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
One thing I noticed when living in Europe and also traveling all over the country, or all over this country, all over Canada, all over Europe, all over Asia, is I have been pleasantly surprised by how vegan friendly, plant-based friendly every other country is. Like, I thought I was going to starve. Everyone told me I would starve in, say, Germany, and I found Germany to be one of the most accommodating. They have vegan supermarkets, and you're laughing, so I know you agree.
Oh, my God. And their supermarkets had, like, 10 different kinds of oats. It was like heaven.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. And I was like, wow. And I remember I went into a 7-Eleven of all things in Japan, and they had 5 different flavors of rice milk. I was like, what is this?
Yep. And like in the vending machines and like,
yeah, there are soy milk vending machines in China. I was like, what?
And kombucha at the supermarket in the frozen section.
Oh, I still can't talk about that.
I know.
But I was wondering if that was your experience too, if you would go to the supermarkets and be like, holy cow, there's so many things here for me.
Absolutely. Like I said, supermarkets just were never a problem. Like the only time where maybe it was a little bit difficult for maybe 2 seconds was at a bodega type, like a really small place in Spain, where I walked in, there were like a few racks of packaged food, but then I spotted a pop top can of beans and I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. And airports too, I find, have gotten a lot better even in the last year, but I feel like I can always find oatmeal and fresh fruit, and you can find some kind of a vegetable sandwich or a salad. Do you find that true? Because you went through like hundreds of airports.
Yeah. I went through more buses than airports, but still between all my tours, I've been to so many different airports. And yeah, I'd say airports I've always been fine in. Airplanes have sometimes been a different story, but airports, it's, you know, rice or like something. I've always been able to find something. Sourdough bread,
mm-hmm.
A really easy plant-based choice that people don't think of. You know, just stuff like that.
Yeah. And of course, you know, keeping in mind, like, this isn't going to be a gourmet meal for me. I'm just going to get some sustenance to get through this next plane leg. And,
right.
And I know you often will carry a bag of already cooked potatoes on board for your long international flights.
Correct. I always do, just in case.
Just in case, because you don't know. Yeah. And I mean, I've been offered vegan fare on airplanes before, but the portion is like so small. It's like the size of my hand. And a lot of times I'm like, I don't even want to eat this.
It's tiny. It's super oily usually. And I just eat more than that. So
I need more than that to get through this day.
I definitely eat more than what they give you on an airplane.
Well, we definitely have. Oh, before, we have so much to talk about today. But one thing is, I know you are like me and you compulsively steal condiment packets.
Yes.
And so everyone that's listening, if you do that, you're not alone. And we are here to tell you, like, every time we get together, we both whip out our bag of stolen condiments to see who has more or more variety. And we trade. It's really, really something else.
I have a little basket here at home that has like in Europe, there were some nice jars of like miniature poupon mustard.
Oh my God. The French jars of the Dijon mustard. I'm not kidding. I thought they were going to like flag my suitcase because I think I had like 30 of those sample jars that I'd collected from 2 months in Europe in my carry-on.
Yeah, that's another airport tip. If you Even if you can't find food there, just, you know, grab a couple takeout. I always grab chopsticks and like mustard. Mustard and hot sauce.
I always thought it was just me. And then one time I was traveling with Carly and I saw her like casually taking mustard packets from a Wetzel's pretzel and putting them in her pocket. I was like, it's not just me.
Totally. Sometimes you're already eating there, but you just take a few extra. You're like, this is not going to be all for this sandwich, but for the plane.
It's going to be for later.
Yeah.
So earlier today, we were both talking about how when we were in Asia or even just like talking to Asians that two times completely separate, both of us were like, oh, when trying to explain your diet, just tell them you eat like a Buddhist monk.
Yes. And I say this as someone of Asian descent, like from my own family. I'm not just like from the outside being like, no, this is like actually what my experience has been like in my own family. Like when I told some of my relatives, I'm Cambodian and Chinese on my dad's side. So when I told some of my relatives that I was vegan, first of all, just like, what is that? And then I started explaining and it's just, oh, you eat like the monks do. And that was the way that I was able to get that across. So yeah, like the monks.
Like the monks. My friend.
Which makes sense because I used to work at Native Foods, which is a vegan restaurant. And quite a few of our patrons would be monks.
That makes sense. When I, a friend of mine, he goes to China a lot for work, but he is a vegan. I think almost 40 years now, he's an animal rights vegan. He's very passionate. And I asked him, like, well, what do you do? Because even though he speaks a little bit, it's such a difficult language for an English speaker that I think he's like to a third grade level. So certainly never to the degree where he could explain his dietary preferences, especially like you said, since they really don't have a word that people understand. Uh-huh. And I'm like, well, what do you do for food? And he goes, I look for a monk and I follow him to see where he goes and eats.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
And I'm like, that's so funny and so brilliant.
I will say, like, I'm not sure it's this way for all Asian cultures, just in the ones my particular family is from, because I do know in Japan there is the macrobiotic thing, which includes fish,
yes.
But that might be a gateway to explaining it. I'm not sure, though, so I'm just going to duck out of this conversation because I'm not an expert on that. But, you know, yeah, monks.
Well, before we move on to some more exciting topics, as I mentioned, you are a musician and you were on tour recently, and that's where all of your great tips have come from. Where can we learn more about your music and listen to some of it? Because I know everyone's got to be curious about you now.
Yes. Well, my name is Chrysanthi Tan, which might be difficult to spell. You could go to my website, chrysanthitan.com. It's spelled like the flower chrysanthemum without the mum. Let's see. Or you could see Lindsay tweeting me every day.
And your album is on iTunes.
Yes. And that might be easier. I have an album on iTunes called Stories, you know, like reading bedtime stories. It's not about bedtime stories. Don't worry. It's chamber music. It's sort of a post-classical, sort of cinematic type of feel is what I've heard from other people. It's for piano, strings, and electronics. So,
and I love it. Everyone at Happy Her Before plays it. We all think
Yay.
It's just like, it's great relaxing music. It's great workout music. It's great driving music. It's great I need to be productive music. Everyone loves it. My mom, I bought her your CD and it doesn't even come out of her car anymore.
I love that.
And she's like, she's so funny. She'll like tell me, she's like, I'm listening to this song. And I'm like, that's great, mom. You don't need to tell me every time. But it's a lot. So that's a good sign.
I love it.
And you also have, is it Patreon?
Yeah. Patreon it's sort of a really cool website. I just made it sound really terrible by calling it a website. It's this really cool space where artists and content creators get to basically make their art. And I'm on Patreon as both a creator and a supporter of other creators, like people like Pomplamoose and Amanda Palmer and Pentatonix are even on there. And basically the model is that the artist, so me, I'm creating like music, for example, and I can have patrons on there, sort of like in the old days where an artist's career would be funded by, you know, one rich like patron. Instead, it's like crowdfunding patrons where everyone can be like a patron at just $1 or $3 or, you know, $50 if they really want. So every time I release a song, someone just contributes $1 and I do about like 2 per month. So it's, you know, a $1 or $2 commitment a month to support me and like get my music on the regular instead of waiting like 3 years for an album. I think it's really cool.
I love it. I think it's a great model. It's one of the things that excites me so much about the internet and technology. And just knowing that artists can be supported and make a living and do their art. And I know you and I have privately talked about this a lot, that when you are an artist, when you are a creative person, and that's any space, it doesn't just have to be music or actually painting. There's so many different arts out there that people think that, you know, it should be... it's not your job. They don't think of it as, even though it is your job, like we believe it's our job. Other people think, oh, it's not a 9-to-5 thing. It's not in an office. So therefore it's not a job. What? It's very frustrating. So I love that there's something out there that's making it so people can do their passion.
Absolutely. It's so critical. And I know you and I bond a lot over being like kind of self, you know, we're both artists in our different ways and entrepreneurs in our own ways. So I know we relate on that.
Yeah. It's like, we need to pay our rent too. Likes don't pay it.
Totally.
Like, I appreciate them. Thank you so much for liking it and supporting me.
Yeah, right.
I need more than that.
Like, there's a music blogger who I read his music business blog, and it's helped me a lot over a couple years in getting my album together. And when I found out that he was on Patreon, I was like, hell yeah, I'll donate. Critical. Like, I'm getting so much from your blog. Like, I love supporting other people on there, so... I'm like, hopefully people enjoy my music and want to support me in that same way.
Yeah, it's awesome. And I mean, Kickstarter is I think you use Kickstarter too as another option. But if you're an artist, definitely check these options out for you to, you know, explore your bliss. So kind of moving on to our next topic is, and this is also something we've talked about a lot, is in the plant-based movement. I know I often feel different because I'm a female and it's so male dominated. Like the people who started it were men and it's just predominantly men in terms of the leaders, not necessarily the people following a plant-based diet. So I feel different, but then you do as well as a woman, but also we've talked about how there isn't even necessarily a voice or maybe not the most welcoming to people who might be gay or bisexual or transgender or gender fluid or any
right
thing that's not square, basically.
Right. The plant-based movement, and I will say that differently from the vegan movement, which also has its own, many of its own issues that I take issue with. But the plant-based movement, like the health part of it, you know, I think we all know, like a lot of the prominent doctors and books and stuff, a lot of really fantastic, useful information, of course. It's also very centered on white, male, cisgender, you know, heterosexual. Mm-hmm. It's sort of a monolithic archetype that you're working with. So when I went to, you know, that weekend that we met at, which of course, like I said, some great information, like great, fantastic. I've learned a lot from the books and recipes. Kind of my mind shuts off, like as a queer female myself, like so much of it is revolved around this is how you go toward mating. Like, this is what our biology is telling us. It's very like square in its, I don't even know. Do you know what I mean?
Oh yeah,
I don't
absolutely
know how to explain it. It's like everything works up to like, this is why men will find a woman attractive and mm-hmm. being at this body shape and being, it's just natural for procreation. I'm like, okay.
I remember I was listening to a lecture on, I think it was basically food addiction, but it was about things that drive us. And there's actually this point made in the Forks Over Knives movie, which I actually, like you said, I love. It's full of great information where it's saying that the brain's like, sex food, sex food, sex food. And then they make a comment, oh, well, if it was a male, it would be, oh, no, I'm sorry. It was like, food, sex, food, sex, food, sex, food, sex. That's your mind. You know, that's the biology, the basic instinct. You're like, oh, but if it's a male, then it's sex, food, sex, food. You know, sex is more important than food. And I was like, wait a minute. This is making so many assumptions.
Yeah, there's just a lot of assumptions and oversimplification in some of these plant-based evangelists, and it extends to race too. I don't know how many times I hear, well, the Asians are so trim because they, and then the Mexicans are so blah, blah. Like, I'm like, you, this is funny because I'm Asian and my relatives didn't know what vegan meant. So yeah. Let's maybe cool it on the sweeping generalizations, but we can take useful bits of information from, you know, but let's just be a little bit more precise in our language here.
And I hear that too. And I'll often hear in other movements too, or just in general, people like, oh, well, French women are so thin, or French women don't get fat. And French women are beautiful, but so are women of all cultures. And it's there's so much more to them than that. and it's not even entirely true.
Right.
And it does a disservice to pretend that all Asians are slender and it's because they're Asian.
Yes. And then putting like so much emphasis on body type and shape and how it, and attractiveness, and just it gets a little bit dicey, let's just say.
Yes. And I've noticed that too. I think it's getting better. I've been at a few conferences recently where I saw other non-Caucasian speakers, and that made me really excited to see that, because the way it is, and nothing's ever going to be exactly the way you want and perfect, but I do often wish that there were more females, and also people that, you know, I would love to see more Asian women speaking out, and there has to be someone somewhere that supports the plant-based diet as a doctor.
I would love to see that too. And
because I feel like I could connect maybe on a different level. I don't know.
Oh, totally. There just should be more, you know, overall representation. And the way the plant-based movement, some people in plant-based movement also talk about, you know, people of different class levels kind of bothers me too.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, if you really cared, you would spend this amount of money on this or that. And it's like, oh, it's so much more plays into it than just numbers. Oh, man.
Yeah. And you said something before about how it isn't really about the way we look. And I know you and I have also connected on this as both being professional females. And I've said to you, I get really upset when you post a music video and the first comment is, oh, you're so skinny, or you're so beautiful, or you're sexy, or whatever. I just get so mad, even though I guess it's a compliment, because I'm like, what she looks like has nothing to do. It's about the music.
I know, it's so much, and it's a lot of pressure too.
Mm-hmm.
And no one wants to think about how they look 24/7.
Right.
And I will say that, like, I don't know, something about being plant-based like also opens up people's opinion confidence. Like they feel like they can just say anything to you.
Yeah, that's true. That's a really good point.
Like, once they find out about your diet and then they make some connection to how you look, mm-hmm. then the whole floodgate opens.
No, like, it's interesting. You just made me think of something.
It must be because you eat that way, or you're too skinny. Here's my suggestion for your new diet plan. Like, whoa there. Like, I've had multiple people offer to give me food, or like send me a nutrition book, or send me to like something to get my body to do something. Like, you'd benefit if you had more of this in that area, or if you just introduced this to your, like, stop.
Yeah, you just made me realize something. A friend of mine is a professional model/actress, and I don't want to give away too much information except to say that most people would recognize this person, I think, because what they're involved with is quite popular. And for a long time, it wasn't, she didn't come out, so to speak, that she was vegan. Like, she just never talked about it. It was avoided. I don't know if she intentionally concealed it. She might have, but then she subsequently did, and did some kind of like PETA mercy for animals thing that most people see big celebrities do. And I swear, until that point, I had really never seen anyone talk about her weight or her size. The things that were said were like, oh, she looked beautiful at this red carpet, or she's gorgeous in this, blah, blah. But it once that happened, oh my God, it was like, so-and-so is losing weight, so-and-so is too skinny, so-and-so is too fat. Like, it just opened the floodgates of, like, massive criticism the second people found out that she was, quote-unquote, eating differently. Yep. Even though the whole time she ate the same way. It's just like now that, oh, she's vegan. So now we can just like totally open this conversation about her that I just realized that as you were saying that, I'm like, oh my God, that's when that started.
Yeah, that I'm not surprised, really.
And it's like, obviously people are exercising, I think, their own inner demons or something, but oh, it's terrible. And I hear it all the time, too. And I mean, I can't ever seem to win because I'm always both at the same time. Oh, I'm too this, I'm too that, I'm trying to this, I'm that. If I don't wear makeup, I'm tired. If I'm wearing makeup, I'm trying too hard. It's like, can we just focus on what I'm doing and not what I look like?
Totally. And my body shape has fluctuated a lot over the many years that I've been vegan. So it's like, I'm just a person too, like
right.
Navigating my life and my body and my habits and the way I'm deciding, like, no, I don't have, of course I don't have everything figured out either, but like, I'm not pretending that I do. And it's hurtful when people make comments all the time, to be honest, like, sometimes they're even good comments. And I have to say, like, I wish that most people would just shut off 80% of the things they say about other people's bodies. Like, when you see someone, the first thing you should say shouldn't be, oh, wow, you look so great now. Or like, you really look like you've got, like, let's challenge ourselves to have some, if you want to say something nice, maybe open up with something different. Like, your smile looks so radiant. Or like, wow, you know, it's so great. How about it's great to see you?
Yeah, yeah.
Or how about...
Or you look really happy.
Or like, I love that new song that you post. Like, why do we have to be like, you're so pretty today. Like, I love insert physical thing. Like, why?
Yeah, I recently was at the dentist and I hadn't been there in probably 6 or 7 months because I really only ever go to get my teeth cleaned. And one of the girls that was there was like, oh my gosh, wow, you look so great. You've lost so much weight. And I think she was trying to genuinely be very kind to me, but I haven't. I didn't lose any weight. And so then I spent the rest of the day being like almost self-conscious, and it's silly and it's all in my own head because I know she was just trying to be nice, but it really like made me start doubting myself.
And then sometimes you really have lost weight and then they're like, you look so great now. Like, you're like, oh, okay. It's good to know that you didn't really think that before. And it goes the opposite way too. Like, there have been times in my life where I've gained some weight and people are like, oh, thank God you were so skinny before. Thank God. Congratulations on overcoming your eating disorder. I'm like, whoa.
I still can't believe that happened to you in the gym. That is so terrible.
Like, I don't, first of all, sometimes I don't even know the person. They've just been clearly staring at me for years, judging, like, that girl is thin. She probably has something going on. And then I gained weight because, like, what, I'm going through a stressful time or something. I don't, and I hear that I look so much better and it was just so awful before. But what is that supposed to tell a person? Like, whether you've lost weight and you look better or you gain weight, like, no one asked for your opinion. And when I first went plant-based, I did shed, like, a lot of that. I did shed, like, initial weight, like, at a steady pace. When I first committed to being whole foods plant-based. And I remember what it was like because I was still working at Native Foods at the time. So I would see customers a lot. I'd see a lot more people than I do now in my daily life. So it's almost like I was getting status updates like every month. Like, for the first few months, it was like, wow, you're looking really good. Like, what are you doing? Like, what, you know, tell me about your diet and exercise. And then after more months, it'd be like, huh, doesn't it seem like you're going too far?
Oh,
like,
my gosh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like,
I have so many of our members email me that this happens to them. So many.
They'll be like, don't you think your sweet spot was like 2 months ago? I'm like, thank you for the progress report.
And I mean, I try to be the person that, you know, can take a compliment and say that sometimes a compliment should just be a compliment. But I do think it can really benefit everyone if we're a little bit mindful when we think about, because we should still give each other compliments.
Yeah.
But I do think that this, our society, especially with women, we just place way too much emphasis on body size and look. And two, body shaming goes both ways. As you've said, I've seen just as many unkind things written on Facebook posts. Like, my friends will put something on Facebook, and I've seen unkind things targeted towards thin women, towards voluptuous women, to athletic women. I mean, at some point, we just need to be like, these are just bodies.
Yeah.
Let's treat them as best we can so that we can be enjoying our lives. But that's not all that we are.
Exactly. And I will say, like, to some listeners who might be think, like, I will say that I think, I do personally think that thin privilege is a thing that does exist. Like, I do think that that is a thing for sure. So I don't want to say, like,
oh, yeah, there's definitely been studies that you're more likely to get hired or promoted if you're a thin person. So,
yeah.
I mean, it exists.
So that is definitely a real thing. I'm not trying to say the two things are equal, but I will also say, just to add some perspective, you never know what people mentally are going through or what may have caused someone to lose weight or what it may have caused someone to gain weight. If there's any disordered eating history, if there's any emotional struggles, like, it's making a critique about someone's size is actually never, it's actually never appropriate. So,
and that's a really great point, is you never know what's going on with someone. And on that same note, and I say this all the time, is accusing someone of having an eating disorder when they really don't does a disservice to all of the people who really are struggling, and that most of us are not doctors and psychologists, so we have no business diagnosing someone else. And it's one of those things that I think were really easy to do, and a lot of times it's a self-defense mechanism. I know I've done it. Oh my gosh, that person is so thin, they must have an eating disorder. But really, I was just not seeing them made me uncomfortable with myself.
Oh yeah, totally. And we're all guilty of it at some point in our lives. And I know Lindsay and I have talked about this, like, I've had some really effed up moments of eating in my life, and, you know, trying only juices, or trying all raw, or trying, you know, whatever, the cabbage soup, like trying the most random anything that I could get my hands on. And that is at a time when I was not my heaviest, but significantly heavier than I am now. No one would have ever accused me of an eating disorder at that time. But that was my, like, lowest point of eating, is when I looked like I was heavier. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. No one would have guessed, like, oh, she's probably definitely on an all cabbage, all liquid diet. No.
Yeah. And that's one thing, you know, anyone who's gone vegan or even vegetarian or plant-based, it's funny that, you know, when you were eating garbage, no one stressed concern for your health. But, you know, if you become vegan, suddenly everyone's an expert on nutrition and is very concerned about your protein and nutrients. But it's interesting you said that too, about when you were, like, on the cabbage soup diet, because when I was still overweight, I was trying every kind of crazy fad diet, doing all sorts of things that are unhealthy. I remember distinctly right before I was getting married and I was so desperate to fit my wedding dress, I read some article in some magazine that said Heidi Klum only ate things that were green. And so I literally put myself on a green apple and spinach diet. I mean, it was not healthy. But like you said, if you saw me walking down the street, you would never, I wasn't under the microscope, actually. My friends weren't concerned, even when I said, like, I'm doing this diet, which was crazy. Nobody pulled me aside and was like, Lindsay, this sounds really unhealthy.
Oh, totally.
But then when I lost some weight going plant-based and I was eating, like, grains and beans for lunch, my friends were all like, I'm really worried you're not eating chicken.
Oh, totally. My mom and
you're just other so skinny now. You should eat this.
other people in my life fully knew that I was, like, doing an only tomato day or something. Like, mm-hmm. other people knew, and it was seemed fine.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, okay.
It was like, okay, great. Maybe I should, let me know how it works. Maybe
yeah,
I
I'll try it too. I'm just like,
Now it's like, we were at a restaurant. I'm like eating a full plate of like veggies and potatoes. And it's like, are you sure you're eating enough? Like, I'm like, yeah, actually.
My friend was over a couple of weeks ago and he was on a cleanse. And so I was like, well, can I make you some kale? And he's like, well, I'm only eating mung beans and rice. And I was like, well, that's cool. Do you want hot sauce? Like, I was just trying to like be accommodating, but he like was like, oh, I'll just have some mung beans and rice. And so I made him some mung beans and rice, and it was a business thing. We were working on some stuff. And anyway, I ended up eating like this giant salad and then six potatoes. And when I say six potatoes, I mean like the little red ones, not like the big baking potato ones. And I remember he like stopped eating his mung beans and rice. He's like, you're still eating? You're eating more potatoes? I was like, thanks. I feel judged.
Yeah, that would be a lot too, actually. You're still eating.
But the thing was, what I thought was so funny about that was, is that he was literally only eating mung beans and rice for 10 days. But he's normally an omnivore who, like, eats at McDonald's and puts bacon on everything. And nobody in the whole 10 days he did this, because I see him all the time, and he was telling people why he wasn't ordering at restaurants and stuff, not one of our friends made a peep. Like, it was totally socially acceptable that he was eating only mung beans and rice for 10 days. But me, when I just go to the restaurant and all I order is like the steamed vegetables and rice, everyone's so concerned.
It's so true.
I'm like, I don't understand this.
It's so true.
But it's totally fine. Like, no one batted an eye at his 10-day cleanse.
I think it's awesome that you offered hot sauce, because I mean,
I did. I busted out my tray of them, and he was like, no, I shouldn't. I was like, you are a strong person, because I'm going to use them all.
But that's cool, though, that you didn't like try to make him a full on, like, that's the thing. People are going to go, like, health and nutrition and food are so personal to people. Like, it's more than just the nutrients and knowing what you should eat. It's like, there's emotions in our food. Like, I don't even mean emotional eating. I mean, like, the things we grew up with or the things that we think we're attached to or, like, certain associations we have with food. So if someone's going through, like, what we consider a weird diet, even if we don't, you know, just, like, give them space. Like, even if it's not our thing, sometimes you just need to go through that. Like, you know, like, I went through my cabbage soup.
Yeah.
Who cares? Like, I got out of it, and that's my thing. But, you know, there's so much judgment that I hear from so many different, you know, ways of eating. Like, well, you shouldn't be, like, you know, if you really care and are passionate about your way of eating, like, maybe lead by example.
Eat by example is my favorite slogan I think we developed on this podcast, because it's really powerful.
Yeah, there's no need to be like, hey, I think you're eating too many potatoes, or, you know, you really, you know, unsolicited advice is sometimes just.
I don't think anyone likes that. I've realized this. I'm like, who likes? I don't think anyone does. Because my friends are parents, are always complaining on Facebook about all this unsolicited parenting advice that they get, often by strangers who don't have children. And I feel that way. I always get unsolicited business advice, and it's almost always from people who aren't even business owners. And it's not that I don't want advice. I always do, and I'm very open to it. But if you don't run a business at all, like, and you never have, how can you tell me how I'm doing something wrong? I don't know. It's just, I think it's a pet peeve. No one likes unsolicited advice.
Yeah, totally.
Or judgment in that sense. So just to wrap up really quickly, you already mentioned that you are Chinese and Cambodian, but you're also Australian.
Greek. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And you were just recently at my house for your very first American Thanksgiving. And I just have to tell the story. It was the cutest thing ever. Her and her mother were at my home, and her mom's Australian. Greek. And they'd never had an American Thanksgiving. And the cranberry sauce is on the table. And they thought it was like a jam to put on the cornbread. And I'm like, no, you put that on the side. And you were just like, on the plate? It was the funnest Thanksgiving, because every 5 minutes you were asking me questions. And it was the first time I realized how bizarre a lot of the foods are.
I was really so confused. It was my first time having gravy too, which, by the way, your gravy was delicious.
But I know, I'm glad you liked it. I was a little nervous.
I did not understand why they were... what stuffing is.
Oh my gosh, you were so confused by the stuffing. But that's one of those things where when you leave, and of course traveling in other cultures makes you see this too, is you just don't realize how different things are when they've been your normal.
Totally. And I have to say, thanks. American Thanksgiving is not normal. I'm just kidding. That was fun.
Yeah. But just super quick, I know you're telling me all the time about your Greek family, because everyone who's seen my big fat Greek wedding knows the joke about, oh, you're vegetarian, I'll make you lamb. I know that's actually happened to you, but there is something in the Greek Orthodox that is yes. It naturally vegan? Maybe you can tell us about
yes,
that.
Yes, it's okay. So kind of like how I said with my Asian relatives being confused about what it meant to be vegan until you put it in the monk context. With Greeks, it's also kind of like, you're vegan, you don't eat feta cheese, you don't eat lamb. But what you need to say is you need to put it in the context of fasting, also sort of a spiritual, you know, thing to do. So most of Greece is Greek Orthodox, like over 90%. So,
and that you mean not the religion?
I mean that in the religion. So in Greek Orthodoxy, they go through fast periods before like Lent. I know Catholics do it too, but in the Greek Orthodox tradition, you are prescribed what to give up. So in the first week of Lent, you give up meat. In the second, you also give up cheese. Like, so basically you strip something away every week until you're basically vegan. Like the only thing I think you do, like honey isn't so, you know, some of the ones that aren't as big ticket of items aren't included, but meat, dairy, eggs, maybe even wine, I think, are out, and even oil, which is
shocking. I had no idea about that.
Right. When I was at a Greek festival over the summer, I picked up one of the cookbooks, and it was like a Lent cookbook. So everything in there is vegan, and there were half the recipes were also marked oil free, because on certain days you're also supposed to be oil free, and it's all for, like, you know, clearing your head and being more pure and everything. So if you just tell like a Greek person, you know, I want a Lenten style meal, it's called nistissimo in Greece, you'll get vegan food.
That is so cool. Now I actually want to go to Greece. I'll have to go and enjoy all of this, maybe during the Lenten season.
Yes, totally. Go before Easter or before Christmas?
Yes, okay, before Easter. Goal for the year.
I'll go with you.
Yes, okay. And one more time, you want to tell us where we can get all your music?
Yes, you can find me online at chrysanthitan.com. And I would love, if you enjoy my music, for you to check out my Patreon page at patreon.com/chrysanthitan. I don't even know if I should spell that or if I should just...
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. So Patreon is spelled Patreon, like patron, but with an extra E. So it's patreon.com/chrysanthitan. And there you'll find me and you can see some samples of my work. And you can also, if you don't want to buy my album before, if you want to listen to it before you... but you could also stream it on Spotify. And then, you know, if you like it, it's up to you.
I highly recommend her iTunes album Stories. I actually was very blessed that I got to see her and some of her friends play the whole album live in a concert. And that was incredible. And I think about every time I listen to the CD, you have to have another concert.
I love that. That was such a wonderful concert. And my tour mates from the Ariana Grande tour played with me. And it was like, it was so rewarding.
It was so beautiful. So definitely check that out. And of course, Chrysanthi and her mom are actually Meal Mentor members, so you can say hi to her in the forums and tell her how much you love her music in the group too. And I think that's it. So thank you so much for coming on. Maybe I'll have you on again because it was so fun and we have so much more to talk about.
I know.
But thank you, and thanks everyone for listening. And if you want to learn more about Meal Mentor, visit getmealplans.com. Have a great week, everyone.